Welcome to the Dr. Diane Show, where we explore revolutionary expansion of mind, body, and soul with me, Dr. Diane Hayden. With over 20 years of expertise as a mindset warrior, perspective shifter, and unshakable optimist, I am dedicated to helping you reach your wildest dreams in business, health, performance, and relationships. Learn about the power of thought and how it shapes your life to take risks, change careers, find love, go on adventures, and live passionately with me, Dr. Diane. Get ready for revolutionary ways of thinking, being, and creating an amazing life. The Dr. Diane Show starts now. Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Diane Hayden, and you are listening to the Dr. Diane Show on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour, where we will explore revolutionary expansion of mind, body, and soul. Each time on the Dr. Diane Show, we will have experts from around the country discussing cutting-edge topics on longevity medicine, natural health, mindset, and soul purpose to help you shift your perspective and become a mindset warrior like me. I'm excited today to have with me Dr. Mariah Hinchey. She practices integrative naturopathic medicine for the whole family and additionally specializes in the reversal and prevention of chronic Lyme disease. Her treatment practices rely heavily on the principles of functional medicine and therapeutic lifestyle change. Dr. Hinchey identifies the underlying physiological and biochemical cause of a patient's symptoms and then teaches them how to correct it by making simple but effective changes to their lifestyle utilizing a combination of nutrition, supplementation, exercise, stress management, acupuncture, and massage therapy. In addition to naturally treating patients with complex illness stemming from underlying tick-borne disease at Tau Vitality in Connecticut, Dr. Hinchey created Lyme Core Botanicals to provide quality, clean, and effective herbal formulas for Lyme disease and other tick-borne infections. Dr. Hinchey also founded Lyme Bites, a multimedia company dedicated to educating patients and practitioners about Lyme disease and tick-borne illness and focuses on bringing patients, practitioners, and resources together for healing Lyme disease. TauVitality.com if you're interested in becoming a patient, LimeCore.com for those interested in herbs, and LimeBites.com for those interested in education. So welcome, Dr. Hinchey. How are you today?
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. So I am excited to get into this for the next hour with you. We're going to be talking about everything Lyme here in Connecticut. I think it's the Lyme capital of the world, but you would know more than me. But I like to start out with my practitioners to find out a little bit about why you're so passionate about what it is you do. So let's start there. I mean, how did you even get into treating, you know, this very complex and often misdiagnosed illness?
So it wasn't by choice. I, you know, already being a naturopathic doctor, have one of the more controversial roles in the medical system, you know, with alternative and controversial treatments. So I definitely did not set my sights on treating the most controversial illness, as I look at it, with the most controversial means. But as a functional medicine doctor who's trained to identify the underlying cause of my patients' symptoms and diseases, you know, you can't ignore Lyme disease. It's the great imitator. It mimics every other disease out there. I think that it can cause a whole host of autoimmune and neurological diseases. And, you know, it affects every cell in the body. It affects every organ in the body. It affects every system in the body. And really, I strongly feel like it should be in the differential diagnosis of every single medical professional, really, in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And sadly, there's still a lot of medical professionals that don't believe it's real, or, you know, most of them don't know how to treat it. And so, you know, they kind of just, you know, tell the patient, well, you know, like you gotta live with this or whatever. And it's crazy. It's literally crazy, but, it's great that you have this practice and you've, you know, pretty much dedicated yourself to that. And you actually were a patient of Lyme disease, correct?
I was. So I was lucky enough to already know how to recognize the symptoms of Lyme. I was actively using labs like Igenix, you know, to do proper testing. I knew what the symptoms were beyond, you know, what the typical symptoms on the CDC, and way more than I ever learned in medical school about it. And I was lucky enough to be able to recognize the symptoms in myself and get to a Lyme literate doctor that could help me. Because when I initially went to my PCP at, I believe, 35 years old with drenching night sweats, like someone erased my memory, a crowbarred sort of headache, like stuck in one temple, and severe muscle and joint pain and fatigue, she told me I was doing too much yoga, climbing too many mountains, and I was just stressed out. And honestly, I was the happiest and the least stressed I had been in about a decade. And, you know, it was just baffling. So luckily, oh, and I think she threw in, it must be early menopause. So yeah. So luckily I was able to, you know, to have the resources at my fingertips that I needed to, you know, to get on the right path and at least have the right diagnoses, and be able to, you know, to start being treated.
Yeah. And I'm sure that you have seen some people who weren't so lucky. I remember the first time that I was exposed to this, it was actually back in 1996, I'm going to say. I was in grad school in Maryland, no less. And I mean, if people didn't think you got, you know, you got Lyme disease in Connecticut, they certainly didn't think you got it in Maryland. And I was a graduate assistant, and I was a trainer basically. And one of my clients was probably like 26 years old. And I remember I didn't know at first what was wrong with her, but clearly there was something. I mean, she was in this research study. Obviously she had gotten healthier and she was more physically able to do what we were doing. We were testing people, taking people through the 6-month strength training program and doing all kinds of functional testing on them. But basically, like, she had a slight limp. One side of her face was drooped, and she, you know, sometimes seemed to have some cognitive, like, brain fog issues. And I mean, honestly, you would have thought that she had a stroke at, like, in her mid 20s. And finally, you know, as we got to know each other more, she said to me, you know, I have Lyme disease. And basically it went untreated for I don't know how long. And this is what happened to me. And so eventually she was able to get it treated and, you know, get things under control. But that stuff like that never goes away, essentially. And, you know, I'm sure you have seen patients with that kind of thing. So let's talk about, like, what are the initial signs and symptoms of Lyme?
So initially, the symptoms are very, very similar to just having a flu. So having some achiness, maybe some headaches, having a fever. Less than 50% of people get the classic bullseye rash. There are other strange rashes that don't look like a bullseye. They can look a little bit more geographic or like a bruise. You can have lymphocytosis, which is where, like, you know, your earlobe gets bright red. There's a lot of other signs that you can actually sense early on that often, again, are misdiagnosed. I've had patients tell me that they went to their, you know, to a walk-in clinic or to their doctor and was told, oh, that's just a spider bite. That's not a bullseye rash. That's a spider bite. I've had 2 or 3 patients tell me that they were diagnosed with cellulitis. So, you know, there's a lot of misdiagnosis going on, and then that leads to a deeper infection. So the infection disseminates, it affects the heart, it affects the nervous system, you know, and really wreaks havoc on the body as it goes on undetected and untreated. And eventually it skews the whole immune system. And then, you know, you see reactivation of Epstein-Barr and other viruses that have been laid dormant in the body for years that actually come out, and now they're a co-infection. They actually become part of the problem.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the things that I was just describing are symptoms or signs that you would see in someone who has what we call chronic Lyme, right. Something that went untreated, you're not going to see that immediately. And that's what's scary to me is that it presents like the flu. I mean, you might just not even think anything of it and just figure like, oh, I've got a bad cold or, you know, I have the flu. I'm just going to take, you know, my normal immune supplements and lay low for a while. So how soon do you really need to be treated?
So what I was taught is that really you have about a 4-day window to stop the disease from disseminating. And this is from after, like from when the tick attaches to you. You know, the sooner you get on treatment, the better.
And initial treatment is actually a course of antibiotics, right?
Yes. Okay. So I believe the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society, which is ILADS, I believe their current recommendation is 4 to 6 weeks of doxycycline, if doxycycline is appropriate, you know, for that patient. And you know, there's varying practice that I see from other local doctors around here. There's a few that just do like a 2-day course of doxy or a 2-pill course of doxy. I've had a lot of patients that were put on doxy for 2 weeks. I was always taught when you prescribe an antibiotic, it has to do with the life cycle of the organism that you're treating and the spirochete, Borrelia, that causes Lyme disease has a life cycle that's 21 days long. So you have to be on that antibiotic for at least 21 days so that the patient has been on that antibiotic for an entire life cycle to even have a shot at eradicating the bacteria from the body.
Yeah. So 4 days, that is interesting to me. I mean, like, what would you recommend? I mean, you don't want people to be automatically thinking, oh my God, I've got Lyme disease every time they have symptoms of like, you know, a cold or a flu. But at the same time, right. Like what would you suggest people do in order to make sure they make that 4-day window?
So, I mean, being hyper vigilant about tick checks, we do tick checks at my house every single time we come back in from doing an outside activity. And that's just even if my son is playing on his little playscape in our yard or going out to the garden to pick vegetables. But every single night before bedtime, we do a full body tick check. I mean, I sit there for at least 10 minutes and, you know, looking through his whole body, he's 6, looking through, you know, every little strand of hair in his head, because prevention is key. This disease is much easier to prevent than it is to treat. And, you know, if you find a tick, then I suggest you send it out right away to a company like tickreport.com that does the full panel of every possible organism that can be transmitted by ticks. And that way, at least you know what you're dealing with. Tickreport.com is very good at getting your results back to you within 48 to 72 hours. So theoretically speaking, if you find the tick, you know, when it first attaches and you overnight it, and you know, you get it to them and then they get the results back to you within that 2 to 3 day window, you're at 4 days.
Okay. Yeah. So I want to talk more about that when we come back. You're listening to the Dr. Diane Show with me, Dr. Diane Hayden. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll explore more with Dr. Mariah Hinchey. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tune in to the hit show, Us, Critical Conversations on the Challenges of Our Time with me, Dr. Crystal Lee Crane, on TransformationTalkRadio.com every fourth Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific. Listen while we focus on the intersections of truth and justice as we learn how to coexist, pushing our social transformation to the next level. Become true stewards of the justice that is needed in our world. Learn more at PreventionAgenda.org. That's PreventionAgenda.org.
Have you heard about shifting the collective vibration and consciousness on the planet? Join me, Kimberly Barrett, on the Sharing Love and Light show every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern at TransformationTalkRadio.com to explore the depth of vibration and consciousness on our planet and learn how you can shine your love and light. To learn more, visit sharingloveandlightshow.com.
Choose the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to corneliastephanie.com.
Juggling life's relentless demands can leave us unbalanced and restless. Do you feel stuck in the overwhelm? Diane McClay is a personal empowerment coach, author, and compassionate storyteller on a mission to boost you into balance and help you move forward with passion and purpose. Get unstuck with Diane on The Diane McClay Show every second and fourth Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Diane, visit DianeMcClay.com.
We're back on the Dr. Diane Show with me, Dr. Diane Hayden. But before we continue, I want to make sure everyone knows how to contact me. You can find me at www.drdianehayden.com or at either of my publications, www.naturalnutmeg.com or www.essentialnaples.com. And you can learn more about Dr. Hinchey at www.taovitality, that's TAOVITALITY.com. If you're interested in becoming a patient, her other website is LimeCore, LimeCore.com. If you're interested in herbal medicine, and LimeBites, LimeBites.com for those interested in education and learning more about Lyme disease and how to treat that. So we were talking about, you know, really the having a 4-day window. And I just wanted to make sure that we got back to where people can send a tick if they do find one on their body and how important that is. So that is, give us the website again that you were saying.
It's tickreport.com. And I believe it is UMass Amherst is where your tick actually goes to the zoology department. And they do very comprehensive testing.
And someone can actually send it themselves? You don't have to go through a doctor? Okay.
No, you literally go to the website. It takes maybe 30 seconds to fill out the short questionnaire. They give you an order number. You write the order number on the plastic bag that you put the tick in, and then you FedEx it to them. And again, I recommend FedExing it overnight just so you're getting it there immediately and you can get your results back within that 4-day window. You know, and in the meantime, I would really start like an herbal prophylactic sort of treatment.
Right. I mean, is there any scenario where you wouldn't need antibiotics? I mean,
The tick could come back completely clean.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. That's good to know. While we're talking about removing the tick, let's talk about how to safely do that, because I know I've had a couple of people I know say they basically just like took the tweezer and kind of like ripped it off, but got the body and not the head. And that's not what you want to do. So let's talk about how to remove it and why that's so important.
Yeah. So I would say the number one rule is you do not want to do anything to really give the tick warning that you know it's there and that you're going to try to remove it. The spirochetes mobilize from the hind gut of the tick into its salivary glands. And so when the tick pulls its head out, it will, you know, regurgitate its contents into you. And so, you know, the kind of old wives' tales of putting nail polish or lighting a match or doing all of these crazy things to it to smother it and get it to pull its head out. I mean, I understand the sentiment, you know, it was to not leave the head inside so that the head wouldn't get infected. But, you know, really, you want to focus on just grasping with a pair of flat edge tweezers. You want to grab the tick as close to your skin as possible. And you just want to use a very gentle pull so that you get a little tenting, you know, like in your skin. and just start counting. Usually by the time you get to about 60, the tick will all of a sudden just let go and pull right out. We don't really want to twist it. We don't want to flip it upside down. We don't want to grab it by, you know, by the bag, because then you're going to rip it apart. So again, you want to get it in, you know, as close to its mouth parts, which are going to be embedded in the body, as possible, and just with very steady, gentle force, pull until it releases itself. And it's not going to release itself in a way that it's backing out and, you know, regurgitating into you. It's just the barbs slowly let go that are on the mouthpieces, and it will come out smoothly.
Now, I was reading, you have an awesome article in our May, June issue. If people want to learn more about this, go to naturalnutmeg.com and you can click on our May, June issue. And Dr. Hinchey has an article on, it's called Shining a Light on Lyme. And you explain a lot of what we're talking about tonight as well in that article, probably go into more detail if people are interested in that. But I remember there was a part of what you were talking about is the size of some of these ticks. Are some of them are so small, I feel like it would be hard to even be able to get a tweezer around it. Is that true?
Possibly, potentially for some people. I think, you know, obviously I've been doing this for a long time. I've removed hundreds of ticks, and if you just follow kind of those simple instructions and you get as close to your skin or your child's skin or whosoever skin you're removing it from, and you just stay calm and you use that gentle force, you'll be fine.
Okay. Yep. Either that or they're going to come to your office.
It's happened.
Yeah, I'm sure.
People waiting in the waiting room with a tick, and yes, the front desk can get me and I will run out and get it off of them. So it's happened more than a handful of times.
I bet. So we talked, I want to revisit basically the steps in preventing a tick bite. Now you talked a little bit about, you know, basically what you do with your family. Let's go through that again, so people are really clear. Like, what do you recommend? Everything that we could do to prevent getting bitten in the first place.
Okay. So then I would say, you know, you have to be aware of your surroundings, and really most of us spend more time in our yards than anywhere else. And, you know, the fact that we have little birds and mice and chipmunks and all these little rodents that are the main vectors for these ticks, and, you know, especially for the small nymph ticks, we have to make sure that we are looking at our whole yard. So I would say number one is cutting back branches, making sure that the brush is trimmed, that all leaf litter is picked up, you know, keeping your entire lawn all the way to the perimeters clear. Ticks do not like hot, and they don't like sun, and they don't like dryness. So ticks like damp, moist, cool areas. And so leaf litter is the perfect place for them. And where I live in Lebanon, Connecticut, we have stone walls everywhere. And the amount of rodents that live in these stone walls are astronomical. And so, you know, keeping all of that as clean as possible, I would say, is number one. Number two, spray. I wish that I could say that organic cedar oil works 100%. In my experience, it doesn't work well enough. We've had to use pyrethrum, which is a derivative from chrysanthemum, that is safer. I guess it is considered to be like in the organic farming, even though it still does have some toxicity to it. The permethrum, I just don't use. To me, that's just something way too toxic. I don't want it on my property. I don't want it getting into the groundwater, and I don't want to take the chance of, you know, my son or our animals being exposed to it. Cedar oil for ourselves, I think, works great. It's a deterrent. Insects don't really like the smell of it. And something that's really gross, but everyone should Google, is a picture of the tick standing there with its front legs spread, just waiting for something to come by so it can latch onto you. And supposedly the scent from the cedar, and you know, there's a couple other essential oils that they don't like as well, but it will actually repel them. It's not going to kill them, but it will repel them from trying to, you know, latch onto you, potentially.
Yeah. And it sounds like that's probably going to be good for other insects too, like mosquitoes.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's cedar oil.
Yes. Cedar oil, I would say, is probably the biggest. Lemongrass, citronella, geranium. You know, those are some of the other big ones.
Yeah. So my next question was going to be, do natural tick sprays really work? Because as much as we, like you were saying, as much as we want to be as natural as possible, as organic as possible, all that, sometimes I think you have to weigh, like, you know, what are the risks? Basically, am I going to get Lyme, you know, like what's the risk of getting Lyme disease, or the effect of, like, you know, the outcome of that versus using something that may not be 100% natural. I mean, to me, it seems like you want to avoid Lyme disease at all costs. And, you know, even if there's something that is maybe, I don't know, 80% organic, I'm just throwing out a number, right, better than, you know, not using anything at all or using something that's not effective.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. And so you can get those kinds of things anywhere. Is there any specific, like, brand or anything like that that you prefer, that you, you know, like?
So
to
we actually, we use Safe Lawns of Salem. So they come out and they do their application every so many days. They have it down to a science. You know, there were years when the ticks didn't seem to be so bad where I would have them come out and, you know, kind of use the big guns, which is what I consider the pyrethrum to be. And I would have them spray every square inch of the lawn and 10 feet into the perimeter. And then I would maintain, and I would have someone else come and do monthly organic cedar oil application. And it worked okay. We did that for probably, I would say we did that for probably 2 or 3 years. And then the ticks have just been getting worse and worse. And then this year, no matter what we've been spraying, we've still been getting the ticks. So now I'm just having the Salem Safe Lawns come out and do it regularly. And I've stopped even trying to use the organic cedar oil.
Yeah. That's it. That it's interesting just to, you know, hear, like what's going on that they're getting so much worse. Is it just, you know, people's, where people are choosing to live, or the tick population is just growing? And, you know, I think it's a little bit of both, you know, a kind of people expanding more out into the country, and also probably, you know, that population getting larger.
Yeah. That's not something that I have necessarily put really any time into reading, investigating, studying. I mean, you're probably right, but I'd have no answer for you there.
Right, right. It really doesn't matter. It's just, this is right, the situation that we're dealing with, and, you know, we got to figure our ways around it and make it work. So awesome. We're going to get into more of this when we get back and take a short break. You're listening to the Dr. Diane Show with me, Dr. Diane Hayden. When we come back, we'll be talking more about natural treatment for Lyme disease with Dr. Mariah Hinchey. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Tune into Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce every first and third Tuesday of the month at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Join Susan and her guests as they share the stories that shift our souls about radical transformations, courageous breakthroughs, and life lessons. Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce. For more information, go to TransformationTalkRadio.com or visit Susan's website at SusanDolce.com.
We're back on the Dr. Diane Show with me, Dr. Diane Hayden. I'm talking today with Dr. Mariah Hinchey. She's a naturopathic physician who specializes in the treatment of Lyme disease. You can learn more about her at www.taovitality, that's TAOVITALITY.com. If you're interested in becoming a patient, you can learn more about herbs at limecore.com, that's LYMECORE.com. And check out limebites.com, LYMEBYTES.com, if you're interested in more education about Lyme disease. So while we were on break really quickly, you were telling me another interesting little prevention technique that you have, which I thought was fascinating. So tell us what a tick tube is.
So tick tubes are something that you can make at home. You can buy them. They're very, very expensive. So if you just collect your paper towel cardboard tubes or your toilet paper tubes, you basically take cotton and just normal cotton balls, and you can soak it in the perithrum and put that inside the tubes. And then you put the tubes all over your property, and the rodents will come and they'll take some of that cotton and bring it back to, you know, to put in their nest. And, you know, even though it's not harm, it's not toxic to the rodents supposedly, but it basically like frontlines them all. So it will actually kill all of the ticks that are living on these rodents. And then another thing that I should mention is you can actually send your hunting or hiking gear out to various companies. There is one, I believe, called Tick Shield, and they sell socks that have been pre-dipped, or they will actually dip your clothes, and they're good for about 70 washes. So that's another thing, you know, if you know you're going out in the woods and you're hiking or rock climbing or doing whatever, you can actually put on clothing that creates that chemical barrier.
That's awesome. Yeah. We were talking about prevention, like any other thing that you can think of that you would recommend to people as far as what to do to prevent getting bitten?
To prevent being bit. Am I forgetting something?
Probably not. I just wanted to make sure we covered all the bases, because I know we talked about clothing and, you know, everything.
Wearing light clothing, tucking, you know, your pants into your socks and your shirt into your pants, and trying to make, you know, somewhat of a mechanical barrier over your body when you're going out into the woods, and then wearing light clothing so that you can easily spot the ticks on you. One of my favorites actually is getting one of those really, really sticky lint rollers, and you can actually like roll your pets, roll yourself, and especially for those really tiny nymph ticks, which can actually be flesh colored, which makes them even harder to see, besides the fact that they're smaller than a period, in a 12 font size, like, you know, normal font that you would be reading, the fact that they can be almost translucent just makes them even harder to spot. But if you get a lint roller, at least the ones that are mobile on you, you know, searching for your skin, you can actually stick them to that. And then, you know, that gets them off pretty nicely. So what you're wearing, taking care of your yard, doing the tick checks. I mean, really, I don't know what else other than not going in the woods or tall grass you can do to really, you know, stop yourself from getting bit. But there's definitely more things you can do, you know, if you do find a tick attached to you.
Yeah. I was just thinking, because we have people listening from all over the country and honestly, all over the world, really, yeah, on Transformation Talk Radio. So I was thinking, like, you know, we both live in Connecticut. And so this is very pertinent to us. And, but I wonder, I think that there are people that live in other parts of the country or maybe other parts of the world that are basically not that concerned. And maybe there are places, I'm not going to talk like outside the US, but I think, you know, there probably are places that are not as, it's not as prevalent, may not be prevalent at all. But I feel like in the United States alone, pretty much every state has had a case of Lyme disease. Is that correct?
I believe that that is correct. Yep. I mean, I don't know, I'm not educated on that enough to speak in certainty, but, you know, who knows if they, I mean, I'm sure they probably got it in their state, right? But I would imagine the argument is like, you could never prove, right, that that person got bit and contracted the disease in that state. But yeah, I don't think there's one state where there isn't somebody living there with a case of Lyme disease. And, you know, there are ticks literally all over the world that carry different species of Borrelia, you know, whether we're talking about, you know, Japan or Australia. I mean, there's Lyme disease. In my opinion, Lyme disease is a pandemic. Mm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I wanted to go back and talk a little bit about why we need to save the tick for testing. I know you touched on that a little bit, but why is that so important? I kind of want to make sure that we get back to that so people understand why they really need to, you know, save it if at all possible and set it in for testing. What information is that going to give you?
Well, I think it tells you a few things. I mean, number one is I wouldn't really want anyone to take antibiotics unnecessarily. And I don't think that it's a good rule of thumb, despite what I do every day and the severe cases that I've treated. I don't think just putting everyone on antibiotics for 3 weeks is good practice. Your microbiome is crucial for your immune system to function properly, as well as to prevent a whole host of other diseases. And, you know, I don't think that we should be taking long courses of antibiotics that we don't need because of multiple reasons, but the biggest being the damage to the microbiome. So, you know, if you send the tick out and you go on like a prophylactic treatment with herbs, let's say, for the first 72 hours while you're waiting for those tick results to come back, you still are within that window where you can then go on the appropriate antibiotic or antiparasitic or antiviral to treat what your tick comes back positive for, because you will know what you have the potential to be infected with well before you're going to test positive on any antibody test. So for example, it can take 2.5 to 3 weeks before you're going to mount the number of IgM antibodies to test positive on any, you know, standard ELISA or immunoblot test. And so if you wait 3 weeks until you're either symptomatic or you are testing positive through antibody tests, you're going to miss that crucial window for early treatment. And by the time you find out you're sick, your disease has been disseminated which means it's in every single cell of your body. And at that point, it's not 21 days of doxycycline. At that point, you're looking at doing combinations of antibiotics for a significantly longer period of time. Or at least that is what I've learned in my decade of treating this and going to annual conferences on the topic.
Yeah, I know so many people, and I'm sure this is going to, you know, resonate with other people too. I know so many people that have thought they had Lyme disease, went and got tested for it, and it came back negative. And then come to find out weeks later, months later, whatever, finally they get a positive test. And by then, exactly like what you said, you're so far down the road with that infection that it now the course of treatment is much more, you know, complicated and longer, and just a whole host of other issues can arise.
Right. And that's the typical scenario. You go to the doctor with a tick bite and they, you know, if they test you, they test you right then. They, for what other reason, don't wait, you know, the 2.5 to 3 weeks that you need to wait to have that peak antibody production to actually test positive. I mean, and there are other things, I'm not going to get into it today, where, you know, you can test via, you know, a urine spot test, and you might get like some earlier clues. But, you know, really what I think we should be doing if we want to test right away is looking at a CBC. Are there white blood cells elevated? Are there neutrophils up? Are there lymphocytes elevated? Are there levels of C-reactive protein going up, like markers of inflammation, like looking at the actual immune system response, that initial response, or looking at like a C6 peptide or something like that, that's going to give you more of a clue versus just doing the traditional two-tiered, you know, ELISA followed by a Western blot, which is the standard conventional testing, at least in my area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's good to know, like looking at all these other markers, so to speak, right, to see if something, you know, if you're headed towards an actual infection or not.
Right. Yeah. And I think knowing that your tick came back clean, it gives you peace of mind, but also like, let's say your tick comes back positive for Babesia. You know, taking doxycycline doesn't get rid of Babesia. You know, if you have Babesia, you have to go on a whole different combination of, they're antiparasitic. So Babesia is the cousin to malaria. So you actually have to take anti-malaria drugs. And, you know, just to rattle off a few, like the, you know, the generic name is Etobicoke, and it would either be in the form of Mepron or Malarone. Some doctors use HCQ, which is Plaquenil. You know, there's a host of other things too. Some doctors will combine like azithromycin with Mepron. But the point is that if you know what you could potentially be infected with, you know better what symptoms to look out for. And then you pick the prescription drug or the herb that is targeted towards the infection that tick had and could have potentially passed on to you instead of just shooting in the dark.
Yeah. That makes total sense. All right. We're going to take another short break. You're listening to the Dr. Diane Show with me, Dr. Diane Hayden. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Have you ever asked yourself, I thought I resolved that issue? I'm Dr. Kathy Charkaloff, author of Finding My Way Home to Who I Really Am. And I'm here to remind you that you deserve a future filled with happiness designed exclusively by you. Each chapter will guide you through the steps of rediscovering and valuing yourself for a meaningful life. Get it now on Amazon or my website, lifeesteem.com. That's lifeesteem.com.
It is time to get inspired to take action in your life. Tune in to Know You're Crazy. With me, Susan Denae. We are identifying, understanding, and treating our crazy one episode at a time. We all have crazy in our lives. The thing that sets us apart is how we deal with it. And I've got you covered. Enjoy your journey. You are worth it. Visit susandenae.com. That's DENEE.com.
too many people go too long forgetting their true soul purpose. Join me, Gina Gale Gray, every fourth Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific in Savvy Solutions. Take the journey back to me with a Freedom Coach and Oracle on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Find your soul oceans now in my show. Learn how you can release the wall around your heart and follow your emotional being back to connection and compassion. Visit anywheremindbodysoul.com.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack, and I'd love to tell you about the latest technology of the Volara Company. I've been using the Volara Company equipment, the air machines, since 1992, and I have found them to be totally successful in killing mold, mildew, and keeping your house fresh and clean. If you'd like more information on it, you can look at MaryJaneMack.com or call our office at 888-777-4232.
We're back on the Dr. Diane Show with me, Dr. Diane Hayden. I am talking today to Dr. Mariah Hinchy. She is a naturopathic physician who specializes in the treatment of Lyme disease. And you can learn more about her at www.taovitality, that's TaoVitality.com. So we've been talking about everything related to Lyme disease, how what the initial signs and symptoms are, how soon you need to be treated, basically how to prevent tick bites. And I wanted to get into now with this last segment that we have. So let's say someone has, you know, has been bitten, has the infection. What can they do? I mean, basically, what is the protocol that you put someone on as far as what you do for natural treatment and herbal remedies and all that?
So I don't really have a protocol. I would say my approach to treating patients is very regimented, but it's not like, here, take these seven herbs, you know, if you have Lyme or if you have babesiosis or if you have Bartonella. Really what I do is I pretty much do an investigation and I try to find out what is making that patient hospitable to their infection. Because typically by the time I get a patient, it's not, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks after they've been bit by a tick or right away. You know, this is someone that has disseminated Lyme disease. So at that point, there's usually tons of inflammation in the entire body. A lot of my patients, you know, like their thyroid is affected or their adrenal glands are affected, their nervous system, their heart, you know, everything is affected and infected. And I really have to figure out what is going on in that particular person that is making them hospitable to the infection. So a lot of patients come to me and they think they are basically trading their prescription antibiotics for herbal antibiotics, and really focusing on killing the organism, I think, is the number one mistake that most people make. So with me, focusing on the organism is about 25% of what I do. Obviously, it's important to know what you're infected with, you know, viruses, parasites, bacteria, funguses, mycotoxins, like what is going on in that person. And then we use the appropriate either viral, antiparasitic, antibacterial, etc., right? But the whole 75% that's kind of left is trying to figure out what is supporting that infection. And these are inflammatory infectious diseases. So they generate inflammation, but they also thrive and feed themselves off of the inflammation. So it's like a vicious circle. So I try to identify everything in the person's lifestyle and physiology that is helping to make the inflammation. And then I try to identify everything that is either distracting or overreacting the immune system and get that out of their body and make sure the person is detoxing. So the two tests that I do with almost every single patient is a micronutrient test, because, you know, we're literally a bunch of biochemical reactions from our physical body, everything from our liver cells to our eyelashes to our immune cells. And, you know, we take something that we eat and we convert it through a system of enzyme reactions into ourselves and the chemicals that run our bodies. And if we're missing these nutrient cofactors that are imperative for those different enzymes to work, we cannot structurally build ourselves properly or expect ourselves to run properly. And if we're talking about rebuilding the immune system, if you don't have the basic building blocks to build your immune system, you're never going to rebuild it. There's also a lot of micronutrient deficiencies that can lead to inflammation. So if we can uncover what the person is deficient in, then we can do targeted repletion of those nutrients to help to give the body what it needs to function properly. And then I do a food sensitivity, IgA, IgG panel to make sure that the patient isn't eating healthy foods that are actually causing either an overreaction or distraction of the immune system, but also leading to increased histamine, mast cell instability, increased inflammation, all of which is going to feed the infection. So really it's this balance between trying to heal the gut, normalize all the organ function, treat the co-infections, rebalance the immune system, decrease inflammation, you know, all of this going on is one big ball of wax while you're simultaneously trying to shrink the load of the infection. Because my belief is that there's no amount of prescription antibiotic or herbal antibiotic that's going to take this infection to zero. It's your immune system that has to completely get it out of your body, or at least get it into remission, which is when I would consider to say, okay, it's dormant, it's not reproducing, you know, to the best that you could make that assumption. You know, to me, that's when the patient has been symptom free for 2 solid months and all of the immunological markers and all of the inflammatory markers that led you to the diagnosis have gone back to, you know, their normal reference ranges. Then I would wean somebody off their protocol and keep watching and waiting and make sure that, you know, symptoms aren't returning and that their blood work isn't going back in the other direction.
Yeah. It is amazing just to listen to you, you know, explain it all. And I'm like laughing to myself as I'm listening to you about the question that I asked, like, what is your protocol? Because I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, this has to be so, so specifically individualized, really, because even just the kinds of foods that someone is eating is going to make a difference. And like you said, it could be healthy foods. Like, you know, most people probably have no idea that they could be eating things like, you know, let's say tomatoes or eggplant or whatever.
Lettuce, broccoli. Yep. Things that it kills me to tell patients they have to cut out of their diet. I like telling patients they can't have gluten. I never make blanket statements other than I do not think that gluten is good for anybody. It increases zonulin, which increases gut permeability. It's inflammatory. So like, that's my number one, you know, no food for most people. But yeah, I mean, it kills me to tell people that they can't have spinach or broccoli, and who would ever think to cut those things out?
Right. Yeah, you wouldn't, honestly. And that's, you know, that's what makes this, you know, dealing with this even more complicated, because, you know, most people would think, oh, at least I have a handle on the food, like, you know, and we didn't even really get into, you know, things like, could exercise be increasing inflammation in the body? I mean, I'm thinking most people who are, depending on what stage they're at, are not going to be exercising anyway, because they can probably barely get out of bed sometimes from, you know, the stories that I've heard from people. But who knows, you know, there could sometimes that is going to increase inflammation in the body. So many things. I mean, what kind of a house do they live in? What are they putting on their body for personal care products? Everything, like there's so many facets to it.
Yeah. And we go through all that. And I mean, a big thing that we haven't even really touched on is mindset. You know, if you are stuck in that, you know, that victim, I'm never going to get better. This is just my life. Nothing's worked, you know, and most of these poor patients have been through the gamut. You know, they've seen many, many specialists, and they've, a lot of them, been told it's all in their head and offered antidepressants. And, you know, I get a lot of really, really broken people, and it's hard to deal with. You know, it's heartbreaking a lot of the times, but part of the treatment is being able to really instill hope and get patients to change their mindset and to focus on the positive. And the reason why I even brought this up, Diane, is because, you know, you brought up the exercise thing, and it's, you know, I tell patients, you have to listen to your body. You have to give yourself permission to stay in bed if you need to stay in bed for a day. Like, you really shouldn't be putting yourself through any size of or any type of strenuous sort of exercise regime. You should really be listening to your body and doing, you know, what feels right to you and what you feel is more nurturing, versus stressing your body out even more than it already is.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. The whole mindset thing, that could be a topic for another talk for sure. Well, that we could definitely spend an hour on that just in relation to, you know, chronic disease and all of that for sure. So yeah, I love that you brought that up. That is so important. And I agree. You know, a lot of times we just push ourselves to do more and more and more, and, you know, thinking that we're doing something healthy by exercise. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you said, you know, you just really need to sometimes just dial it back and just do whatever you can do. So this has been awesome. I want to thank you so much for today. Again, people can learn more about you, Dr. Hinchey, at tauvitality.com. And I want to thank all of you for tuning into the Dr. Diane Show. Please join me the first and third Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. Next time on the Dr. Diane Show, we'll be discussing more about the power of thoughts and beliefs and the impact they have on your life. Have a great week, and I'll see you back here next time.
Thank you for tuning into the Dr. Diane Show, revolutionary expansion of mind, body, and soul with me, Dr. Diane Hayden. Tune in every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Center your thoughts on what you want and shut the door on every suggestion of fear, worry, or lack from your own consciousness or the consciousness around you. Once you master that, everything is possible. To learn more about me, Dr. Diane, and receive a free digital subscription of my magazine, visit naturalnutmeg.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.